Hi, this is Jerry Lee. And to start this podcast, I first would like to hear from the patient experience of those who have experienced barriers in getting the diagnosis of a pyrimune deficiency and also access to treatment. So we are very fortunate to be joined by Yvette and Jerry Shorten. Yvette is a mother of a child with primary immune deficiency, and Jerry is now post-transplant for severe combined immune deficiency, and they have graciously agreed to join us to talk about their experiences in obtaining the diagnosis and getting treatments for primary immune deficiency. So Yvette and Jerry, thank you for joining Allergy Talk today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jerry, for having us out.
So Yvette, I want to start with you. The purpose of this podcast is to learn about the experience of navigating the healthcare system, especially when you're a parent with a child. You're trying to figure out why your child is sick and obtaining the diagnosis of a primary immune deficiency. So I was wondering if you could share the initial diagnosis of the PI with your son, Jerry.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Lee. In the beginning, in the 1970s, is when my firstborn son was diagnosed. And for us, I think it was so new to the medical world of severe combined immune deficiency that it was not exploratory, but very on the edge of just trying to understand and know more about the disease. So my aunt had a son who was placed inside of the protective environment of the plastic bubble. And no one knew what or why he was ill, what disease, what was causing it. At the time, David was at Texas Children's Hospital also, and he had been placed in the inside of the protective bubble. But the only way at this time in the early 70s that we were the diagnosis or testing for the diagnosis was there was almost through having a child who previously passed away. And that was the same for Carol Ann, and it was for me also. My aunt's son passed away while I was about 7 months pregnant. And when my son was born, I still did not know or had not had much contact with physicians to know of how to diagnose him or have him tested. But when Dr. Montgomery and Dr. South approached me, he was tested. But I don't think it would have been, if it had not been so new in the medical field, I think they were trying to learn as much as possible. So we were there at the right time to be able to be in with that groundbreaking technology of learning more about severe combined immune deficiency. And when my son was tested, we did a skin graft from Dr. Montgomery to Dedrick, my firstborn. He was born in November 1972. And that helped confirm his diagnosis with not having a thymus gland and any of the lymph nodes or the tonsils and all that you look for that would create antibodies in the body. So that was for the first diagnosis was actually that it would set the ground for Jerry's diagnosis. And Jerry was born in 1986, which at the time, as you know, David had passed, was no longer with us. And there was so much new technology, so many ways of the diagnosis and treatment at that time, which since from the 86, we've just explored it in ways of treating the disease now.
So to repeat back to what you said before, it sounds like your aunt had a son who was identified to have severe combined immune deficiency, and that brought more attention than to your first son to look more carefully for the diagnosis.
Yes, my aunt, son was diagnosed with SCID. And so from that, we started looking at any females that may be pregnant at the time to let them know their child would be beneficial for them, for their child to have this test to, if it was a male. For us and my family, it is X-linked, so it only affects the male infants. So if it was a male born, we needed to have that child tested for SCID.
So when your first son, Dedrick, was born, they already warned you that this is a possibility How early was he able to get care and obtain the test that confirmed the diagnosis?
He was 2 months of age when he was tested. And at the time, he was actually placed inside of the room across from David. And we waited for the skin graft and all of the, like I say, they checked for thymus gland, all of the signs and everything that they would look for. And when the test, everything came back positive, he remained inside of the plastic bubble for the next 5 months. And he passed away at age of 7 months with pneumonia, underlying condition of pneumonia caused by severe combined immune deficiency.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
So, as you stated before, one of the things that was, you said, to your advantage was the fact that because of this new condition was recognized, you particularly had a lot of effort and attention placed on your family to give you every resource for the personal interest of the greater understanding of the disease. How many members in your family were affected, and were they all allowed access to this sort of support?
Well, the answer is yes. They were allowed to this support. I just give my hat off and so much grateful and appreciative to the physicians at Texas Children's Hospital, because they were there for all the time for, you know, throughout each family member, each female who actually had a son. There were six born in our family, which my aunt also lost another son in 1976. As you know, it is at 50% chance of each, and 50% of each pregnancy where you may have a boy, and it's that 50% chance that this boy would have SCID. And for me, all three boys actually did, was afflicted by the disease. But I have three cousins also who have lost boys to SCID, and one that is actually living now. So Jerry and my other cousin, there's only two in the family now that have survived.
And so, again, because you had existing family history, and of course you're at a premier institution like Texas Children's, it sounds like immense resources were given to support your family and to make sure that all of your family was able to get the best possible treatment. Did any, yourself or any of your relatives, encounter any challenges in getting the treatment for severe combined immune deficiency?
Well, the challenges were not on the medical side. It was from insurance. This was extremely difficult. I don't know that all of the details of my family members, but for me, from the onset of Jerry's birth, even before the while in the hospital prior to actually receiving the transplant, there was always an issue with the insurance agencies.
Tell me some of the challenges that you had with insurance.
Okay, well, Jerry was born, like I said, in 1986, September of 1986. The insurance at the time was one of the, I think, what you would call an HMO. You know, I don't know if you remember, there was a lot of McGregor clinics and a lot of different clinics where providers were to where you must go to their facilities. When he was born in one location, he was born at Herman, transferred to Texas Children's for the treatment. And because he was transferred and they did not want to cover his insurance and saying that he went home and then went back to our hospital and it was not covered. And with all of, we had to explain that he never went home. He was never cared for at home. He was only transferred from one hospital to another before. It was probably about a year before they would actually cover the expenses. And I really have no understanding of why and how they send you through these, you know, steps and loops and try to prove something before they are willing to cover. So they did not want to cover his treatment, nor the fact that I needed to stay at the hospital with him, my being at the hospital. They separated certain things that they would not pay for. This was not covered. You know, his things for him, say his diapers, they would say, we're not covering that. And as it moved on through his treatments and when he was released, still being with an HMO, they wanted me to take him. Their split what tests could be covered under the insurance in what location. So if it could not be covered for me to go into Texas Children's Hospital where he's being treated, I needed to go to their clinic, have whatever tests that they would cover, and then go for additional testing. Do you know how traumatic that is for a child to have so many? And as we moved forward with medication, if a physician thought that a particular medication would best treat him, although it was not prescribed for this actual treatment, they would not cover it. It must be. But this is what works, and this is what's helping him. It's keeping him alive. I've cried many days over the telephone begging to cover his medication and trying to explain how he would not survive and would not live if you would not okay this. And it was just a dry tone of, well, this is our policy. So I had many rounds, and his physicians wrote many appeal letters. This is what this patient needs. This is what we must do. And after 3 to 4 letters, they will finally approve it. But then 6 months later, you're going through the same experience. And it's just so, when you're already experiencing so many health issues, to have this battle with insurance, it's just very unbelievable that a life is involved and you're going through policy.
Yeah, it sounds like you're spending a lot of effort fighting for your son's life when there's treatments available and it is appropriate and needed, but it's not being reimbursed due to a policy. It's sort of like maybe a lack of humanism, perhaps, that you might perceive with that. I don't know if that's how you felt about it.
Yes, it's like, don't you have any compassion? Where's your empathy? There has to be something that we can do. And a few times he actually went on trial medication because they would refuse to supply the necessary medication. So we go through a medicine that's in a trial stage.
So you would have to find alternative medications because it wasn't paid for. You would have to enroll in a research trial or something that you weren't sure about or maybe felt uncomfortable.
Yes, the insurance company, if they would not approve certain medications, we would try another medication that would be in a trial stage. Sometimes the pharmaceutical companies were so much more, I can say they have more empathy and compassion than insurance, because the pharmaceutical company would provide so many months of a medication and help to try to help until you can find a proper insurance company or if you need in between or what you need to do. But as you know, even with the medication for today, the expense, there's just no way that a family, you would mortgage your home, do everything, and still not have enough money to cover, because the prices are so just skyrocketing. The prices for medication is just so extreme. And it's sort of like the healthy food, you know, how healthy food, it costs so much more than the bad food, the food that's not healthy for you. Unhealthy food costs so much less.
And I can even step in and testify, you know, now, you know, me being 35 years old, I'm working and I'm having issues now with my insurance company at 35. I've had this diagnosis since I was 2 weeks old, and I'm still having issues with getting my medication, fighting with the insurance company. My doctors are still writing appeals. They always say it's always about the policies and, well, this doesn't match your diagnosis and we don't know what this is. And it's like, well, it's a very rare condition. And I think insurance companies don't have anything for these rare conditions to their policies. So I'm still struggling with it now. And so the company that I work for, they switched insurance companies. And then it took me over 6 months to get approved. And then it took my doctors writing several appeals and my HR for the company that I'm currently employed at right now to actually step in to advocate for me, for them to send me my medicine. And even then, it's still almost a struggle every month of I have to call, they send one dose, I have to call every month just to get my doses sent to me. So
Jerry, I just really wanted to get more in depth on that experience then. I mean, it sounds like, you know, we know what this diagnosis is, we know what we need to treat it. There's things that you need to keep yourself well. and you're getting challenges to get the treatments that you need. If you could tell me a little bit about that experience of like, how did you feel that affects you and your health? So for people could understand how that feels.
Absolutely. So I live a very healthy lifestyle now. Typically, I'm on a strict diet. I work out regularly, but it is a mental stress because every month when I call, I'm always, you know, I always want to have faith, but at the same time, you just never know when the insurance company is going to say, well, your medication ran out, or no, we're not going to send it because we need this authorization or this policy change. And it does, and it's happened before. And so it's more of a, just like a mental stress of like, okay, I hope I get my medicine next month. But, you know, like my mom had said earlier, Texas Children and Hospital and their staff has been super supportive of everything that we need. So I know that makes me feel confident having Texas Children behind my back and the current employer that I work with now, because they know my story. And this last round, I had to get my HR involved to be able to get my medicine approved. But like I said, it took about 6-7 months of going back and forth for me to be able to get the medication. And I had switched my insurance, my job switched my insurance plan, and I got exactly everything that I had on my previous plan. And I had documentation of how long I've been on this and everything. And they just flat out said no. And I was like, this is my health that's on the line. You know, I have to have my medication. And this medication, this is like over $1,200 for each shot, you know. And I don't know everybody's financial situation, but, you know, a lot of people don't have the funds and the means. And that's why we pay for insurance to be able to cover these expenses. And I just wish that was a better policy for underlying conditions for PI patients out there, because for the insurance company, I wish the insurance company would just build something for underlying conditions, because they don't have anything. And it's just a struggle because some, you know, people's lives are on the line, and, you know, we don't have months or years to wait. Like, you know, we need our medication now, and who's going to pay for it? End of the day, the patient and the family patient is the one that's suffering from it the most.
I'd like to add is that I wish the insurance company would trust the physician, that the physician will not prescribe a medication for a patient that's not going to be beneficial for that patient. So the insurance, they have their team sitting here on the review board, and they don't have the medical knowledge of each patient's individual. What works for this patient may not work for the next. So don't put them in a box and say, well, this is only for this patient with this diagnosis. If the physician sees something within this patient where this medication will be beneficial and help with their treatment, why is it that the insurance will not trust and believe and work together for all involved? And if the patient starts doing well and improving, that's the less expense to the insurance company there, because they may improve to where they no longer need the medication.
Absolutely. Just so the audience can understand, Jerry, could you tell me how much medicine and medical visits you need to keep yourself healthy? What is your routine to keep yourself well in terms of the medical system?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know when I first got diagnosed, I was basically living at the hospital. My mom was always taking me. I was getting my medication at home, sometimes at the hospital. Then as I've gotten older, it's almost kind of like wine. I call myself like wine. Like, I've gotten better over time, where I don't have to go to the hospital as much because I am getting better. My body is working on its own a lot better than it was before. But it's almost like I'm a guinea pig too, because they've tried several different medications on me to see, okay, you know, let's see if this worked, let's see how this affects me and my health. And now, fast forward to me being 35, I usually go and get check-ins every, I would say, 3 to 6 months out of the year. And just depending on how I'm feeling, what's going on, some years, you know, I'm there every other month. And some years I'm there every 3 to 4 months. But luckily, I can take my medication at home now, and it's just an injection, interferon. And I just inject it once a month in my leg or my stomach, or my mom used to inject it in my arm whenever I was living with her. But now I can't get back there, so usually it's in my stomach or it's in my legs. But now I'm living a healthy, successful life. I'm not 100% healthy, but I am a lot better than I was when I was younger.
And then, you know, looping back to something you said before, obviously there has been challenges to get the treatment that you needed due to cost and insurance. Is there any instances where that negatively affected your health? Any particular stories that stand out?
Yeah, I mean, it does. The stress of the unknown and not knowing, it does something to your health. So I try to have the faith and keep the stress level down as much as possible, because if I get too stressed out, I start breaking out. And that's kind of one of the issues that I have with my condition, that I can easily break out into like these hives on my face and my hands and my body. And so I try to keep the stress level down. So that's, I would say that's probably like the one example, because, you know, your image is everything. So what people see is kind of what they kind of judge you by. And I know they say we don't supposed to judge people, but we do in a ways because we're human. So if I get stressed out, I can start to break out. And then it's just a stress on top of stress at that point, because I'm thinking that everybody's looking at my condition and not me.
When Jerry was in middle school, just as he left elementary, is when, and I don't know if it was the stress or what brought them on at the time, or if it was just that time his body is changing or something, but that's when the lesions started. And they started to where they completely covered his body and his scalp, his ears, under his feet. And it was so difficult. He did not want to go out. Even in the summer, he wanted to be covered. He covered his hands. And it was very difficult for him growing up, even through the middle school, until the doctor, the physician, was able to find a medication that helped. And they didn't go away completely, but they became manageable.
What were the causes of the lesions?
Well, I'd say lesions, but they are...
Like a skin rash, but...
Yes, it was more of the wart type.
Essentially, it's like a viral infection of the skin.
Right, it's a viral, because at this time, we did not know that he did not have the natural killer cells, that they didn't reconstitute in with the transplant. So he does not have natural killer cells. So he get these viral infections, skin infections, viral lesions, different. And so that the medication that he's on.
And it comes and goes.
It comes and goes.
One month I can be okay. Next month I flare up, and it has a mind on its own.
So the medication really helps. You know, some of the medications help them keep it under control and the stress levels. And anytime, you know, you're stressed, your immune system is reduced, which open the door for more infection.
So just to summarize, the outside appearance of having the manifestations of a primary immune deficiency with the viral infection of the skin, I mean, greatly affected him when he was younger, and is very important for him to get the treatments that he needs so he can feel like a regular person.
Absolutely.
Very, very early, I asked the question about the initial diagnosis, and we've been talking about treatment, but just overall through your entire health journey, did you perceive any barriers to diagnosis, treatment, access to the healthcare system or health because of your race, because you were a person of color?
I don't think so. I had one experience where I did feel that it was because of race, and this was going to one of the HMO clinics. And Jerry was 3, and he had been very ill. He'd been sick for a few days. I'd taken him in to see the physician at the clinic, and he dismissed me. He told me that he's fine. He's had his transplant. You just need to go home, and he has an infection and get over it. And I'm telling him, I've watched him. He cannot stand. He does not play. He leans his head over. He's not eating. He still has fever. And he literally just dismissed me and walked out. And at that point, I felt as though, why is he doing this? Is it is it because of our color? And he moved on to another patient. And that afternoon, I took Charity Texas Children and myself to the hospital. He, at that point, because of the antibiotics that he had received, it made it difficult to determine. But it was thought, he did have meningitis, but to determine if it was viral or bacterial, we were not able to. He was in the hospital for 3 weeks, and into that third week, they were ready to do another transplant because he was not getting better. When this could have been avoided if the doctor had just been more, I understand he's had a transplant and we need to stay on top of this. Let's get him to the emergency room and see what's going on. But he dismissed me. And at that point, I felt it was because of my color.
And it's interesting you made that comment before that that was a doctor that you were assigned based on your HMO.
Yes.
So it sounds like you also felt like the insurance and sort of the requirements of the insurance also was a barrier to getting the care that he needed.
Yes.
I see. Jerry, do you have any experiences yourself that you feel that race was a factor in terms of your access to care?
As far as race, I think the only time that I felt like that was somewhat of an issue is when I was trying to find a dermatology doctor to treat me. But as far as like any other time with my medical history, you know, I've always had big supporters and I never really had any major issues when it came to race. It was more so trying to get my medicine approved. That was really the biggest challenge for me.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I wanted to know if you wanted to have any final words that you'd want our audience to know about just the disparities we're noticing in patients with a primary immunodeficiency getting the diagnosis or getting access to treatment. So, you know, this podcast is being advertised to healthcare professionals, nurses, emergency department physicians, primary care physicians, and allergists, immunologists, trying to raise awareness of the some of the experiences that families and patients go through. And you've told us a lot about your experiences with the healthcare system and how some of the systems in play, like different levels of insurance, or as you said, a couple stories about how race may have played a role in denying access to care. If you had any final words to the audience that you'd want them to think about as they listen to your stories and as a take-home point or a summary?
Well, I guess as from a mother's point of view, I would say for finding a support group belonging to another group for that you may experience some of the challenges that you have, and even just having someone else to talk with who understand what you're going through. I think it's very important for the parent to have that support, but also for your child. I think the patient, being your, you know, if you're a son or daughter, it's very important for them to have a support of someone they can speak to and understand what they're going through. I mean, their siblings are there, but they really don't understand. And actually, the siblings may even need a support group to understand why mom and dad is being taken so more, you know, for one child or another. But having that support is very helpful. Also, that for the physicians, I don't know how, and it's not their duty, I don't think, but when they have the patients with these diagnoses, I know it's so easy for the patient to feel, well, now I've had the transplant and it's okay, I'm well, I'm going on and never. But they need to be encouraged in that how they should follow up with their health and stay involved and keep their appointments and stay involved and learn as much as they can for their own, to be their own advocate. And I think those things are just so very important, to be your own advocate and be finding groups and learning as much as you can and having support groups to help relieve that stress.
You know, we named a lot of resources for practitioners, and we have a website. We'll post that. What resources you found the most helpful to gaining access to other individuals who have similar experiences to get that support that you think is so essential? What did you find most helpful for you?
Well, most helpful for me, I did join the Primary Immune Deficiency Foundation, where we is for all primary immune deficiency, not just kids. But the SCID Compass is really great. SCID's Angels, they're good for those who have specific disease. But there are support groups for over 400 different PI disease. That if you find right one that fits you and your needs, it can be such a relief when you're going through different challenges or looking for different, even as far as insurance, how to maneuver, how to work with them, and how to get the most benefits out of your from your insurance agency. So all of that have been so helpful to me over the years, and I think it's been very helpful to Jerry. You know, we'd go to family retreats where you're around just everyone. You can feel free that everyone is like you. You're not out here standing alone. Everyone around you, they have experienced some of the same challenges that you have, and you can be free and be yourself and around them. Speak freely of what you're feeling, what you're going through. So I think that's been helpful. And finding the physician that you actually feel have a connection with. If you don't have a connection with this physician, maybe they're not the right one for you. Just have to be in tune and more aware of what your needs are, and explain that need to your physician. Explain what you need to be more helpful to your son or daughter. And if that's something that cannot come together, then you may need to find another physician. But you have to do some of the lit work yourself as a parent. I think you have to really be involved in your child's care. And the physicians, I know they have many patients. They just have to be more aware and understand, too, some of what the patients, and maybe it may be for them to say, I think this physician may be better for your needs and your family, and pet, and let them go to someone if they see that, you know, there's a, not saying a conflict, but they're saying that things are just not matching, that where they both, they can give the best treatment, and the treatment can be received by the patient and the parents, the family, with no barriers. Because if you have that barrier where you're really not listening, I really don't trust them, and I really don't think, you know, then you can't move forward with the best treatment for the patient.
I see. Jerry, did you have any last words you wanted to share?
You know, some things that my mom had said, and then have some things I kind of want to add to it. So definitely having the right support group is really huge, and being advocated and, you know, advocate yourself. I had a very strong family who's really supported me and really supported me in a way of what I needed, because I was diagnosed at such a young age and going through so many different changes as a teenager, as a child, and, you know, being called different from everybody else that's at the same school. I needed that support group, and my mom and my dad and my sister and my family just in general really supported me and didn't make me feel any different and was there for me all the time. So then my mom introduced me to IDF. And IDF is a community, like she said, that have other patients who have different other primary immune deficiencies. And that was a really big relief, because I didn't really feel alone. I didn't feel like I was the only one who had this diagnosis, that I realized that other people are dealing with this too. And they look normal. Or somebody have the same condition I does. So it made me feel a little bit better about myself too, as well, that I wasn't alone. For as finding the right doctor, I think it's really huge. I was blessed to be born into a group of doctors who already had the experience of this particular condition. And so I didn't have to go out and do the research and find the right doctors, but I realized talking to other patients who have this, who have the condition like I do, or something that's similar to it, they don't have the right doctor. And their doctors are looking at them like, no, you're fine. And they're really not fine. So definitely getting the right support and finding the right doctor, it's going to be really critical to help you through this journey.
All right. Well, again, those were all the questions I had. And I really appreciate you spending the time to talk with me for the podcast. So I appreciate you sharing your story and your experiences. I think your voice is very helpful for people to understand the experience, to gain empathy, to think critically about the issues on how to support patients with primary immune deficiency. I appreciate your time.